Good afternoon, everyone. The Labor, Industry and Veterans and Military Affairs Finance and Policy Committee will come to order. I would like to announce that this meeting will take place in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This meeting may be viewed on House Public Information TV, which is available on the House website. As is the custom with this committee, please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Before we get started, our committee legislative assistant, Grace Doyle, will take the roll to note who is president. Ms. Doyle, please take the roll.
Chair Eklund.
Present.
Vice Chair Zhang.
Present.
Representative Detmer.
Present.
Representative McDonald.
Present.
Representative Berg. Representative Bliss is excused. Representative Edelson.
Present.
Representative Frederick.
Present.
Representative Greenman. Looks like she's in the waiting room. Representative Nelson.
He's headless.
Representative Poston.
Present.
Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, present.
Representative Sundin. Representative Berg. Representative Greenman.
Present.
Representative Sundin. And with nine, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Doyle. Quorum is present. Next on the agenda is approval of minutes from January 12th, 2021. Every member should have received a copy of today's minutes in their inbox. Seeking a motion for approval of the minutes, Representative Zhang.
So moved, Chair.
Representative Zhang moves approval of the minutes from January 12th, 2021. Any comments or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of the adoption of the minutes say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. Minutes are approved. Next item on our agenda is a presentation from the Department of Labor and Industry and Commissioner Robertson. Members, please use the raise hand function for questions and the chair will recognize you when the time comes. Commissioner, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Representative Eklund. Thank you very much for having me here today. Before I get started, I would like to announce that a number of my senior staff is joining me here today, including Assistant Commissioner Nicole Blissenbach, Assistant Commissioner Heather McGannon, and our Legislative Director, Kate Peruschek. I'd like to begin by saying thank you for having me and providing me the opportunity to present an overview of the Department of Labor and Industry. I'm pleased to be here today. My name is Rosalyn Robertson, and I am the temporary commissioner for the Department of Labor and Industry. I look forward to getting to know each of you individually. And I have had some one-on-one meetings and will schedule additional meetings in the coming weeks. Before I begin my presentation, I'd like to share with the committee a little bit about myself. Prior to the appointment of temporary commissioner, I served as deputy commissioner. Prior to that appointment, I had previously served 30 years in various positions throughout the agency. After 30 years of service, I retired in 2015. I returned to the Department of Labor and Industry in March of 2019. During those 30 years of service, I have worked in or led each of the four program divisions within the Department of Labor and Industry. I am honored to work in public service, and I am honored to lead the Department of Labor and Industry at this time. Because we've all been impacted by COVID, I wanted to begin the discussion today really speaking to how labor and industry has responded to have participated in the COVID response. Labor and industry has been at the forefront of providing assistance in responding to COVID. We have participated, we are engaging stakeholders during our weekly business calls and weekly webinars. Since March of 2020, DLI has made it a priority to provide its stakeholders with information necessary to navigate through the COVID pandemic in the workplace. We have worked with different stakeholders. We have provided assistance to businesses in helping to develop and implement safety, health and safety protocols in the workplace to help keep workers and customers safe. Finally, we've responded and we have responded to many and continue to respond to the highest number of inquiries and requests for assistance that the Department of Labor and Industry has ever seen. Throughout this process, we have seized the opportunity to work with our stakeholders. This has been a two-way street where both the agency and the stakeholders have benefited from the creativity and feedback that we are able to provide to our stakeholders and partners, making DLI better in its work. I'll begin the presentation with the agency operating areas. The Department of Labor and Industry mission is to ensure Minnesota working and living environments are equitable, safe, and healthy. The Department of Labor and Industry vision is to be a trusted resource and impartial regulator for employers, employees, property owners, and other stakeholders. The work of the agency is guided by the One Minnesota Plan. Over the last 2 years, the agency have developed strategies to positively impact equity and inclusion, data integrity, effectiveness, compliance, sustainability, and post-COVID, we focused our attention on developing a COVID protection strategy and participating more in the economic Recovery and Working Minnesota's Working Minnesota strategy. Next, we have the agency organization chart. Our ARC chart has not changed since my appointment as temporary commissioner. We continue to focus on the very important work that the agency does. As you can see, labor and industry touch many different areas, and we accomplish our work with the support of 445 full-time employees. I realize that our focus today is on policy. However, I will just very briefly speak to the agency funding source. This chart shows the source of revenues or appropriations for each of our areas. The general fund, as you see, is a very small fraction of the overall funding of the agency. Workers' compensation is the largest source of revenue for the agency, which is from an assessment on insurers and self-insurers active in Minnesota. The construction code and licensing fund is revenue generated from licenses, permits, and inspections for the work performed by the agency. The next slide shows the base budget expenditures by program. Workers' compensation benefit and CCLD are the largest expenditure areas, accounting for more than 50% of total spending. Now we'll jump right into the program areas, and I will start with the Workers' Compensation Division. The Workers' Compensation Division exists to administer, process, and help employees injured on the job to receive proper medical treatment and wage replacement benefits in a timely manner. It mediates disputes about injuries and assist injured workers. These functions are supported and carried out by the five business units within that division. The Special Compensation Fund administers the workers' compensation claim of injured employees who work for employers that did not carry workers' compensation insurance, are those employers who have declared bankruptcy. The Special Compensation Fund also administers the asbestosis program and the supplemental benefit and second injury reimbursement programs. It also enforces the requirements that all state employers carry workers' compensation insurance. The next business unit is the Compliance Records and Training Unit. This unit maintains workers' compensation files. The Claims Records and Training Unit ensures compliance with benefit provisions of the workers' compensation law by auditing workers' compensation files, by penalizing employers for late payment, and it provides education and outreach. It certifies qualified rehabilitation counselors and provide analysis of medical and rehabilitation issues. The next unit is the Alternative Dispute Resolution Unit. This unit seeks early intervention into workers' compensation disputes through conferences and mediation. It handles calls from the workers' compensation hotline and respond to questions from injured workers, employers, healthcare providers, attorneys, and qualified rehabilitation consultants. Next, we have the Vocational Rehabilitation Unit. This unit provides vocational rehabilitation services to help injured workers return to work. And then last, the Office of Ombudsman. This office is a critical resource for injured workers. It is a separate entity within the department. Its purpose is to inform, assist, and empower injured workers and small businesses that have difficulty navigating the workers' compensation system to help resolve problems encountered in the system. This is a particular good resource for any injured workers. It's also a good resource for you as elected officials as you hear about concerns from individual injured workers. We welcome you to use that resource. And if at any time you feel the need or have opportunity to need that service, I urge you to reach out and coordinate a communication through our legislative director, and she will connect you with the ombudsman for the department. I would like to talk a little bit about the Special Compensation Fund assessments paid by insurers and self-insurers. This fund funds all of workers' compensation programs at the Department of Labor and Industry, as well as the operating expenses at the Office of Administrative Hearing, the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals, and the Anti-Fraud Unit at the Department of Commerce. Next, I'd like to talk briefly about the Workers' Comp Campus Program. Over the past 5 years, the department has engaged in discussion and preparation to launch a modernized workers' compensation technology program. The campus program launched on November 2nd. The objective of the program has moved the administration of the workers' compensation division from a paper-based process to a data-driven system. The program objective is to modernize the technology and the processes to provide stakeholders greater transparency and access to data to improve service delivery, along with improving the business processes here within the workers' compensation division. The next program I will discuss is the Minnesota OSHA program. The Minnesota OSHA program consists of two individual programs that work to accomplish a common objective, and that is to improve the safety and health in the workplace for Minnesota workers. The Minnesota OSHA compliance program helps to keep Minnesota workplaces safe and healthy through workplace inspections, investigations, and compliance assistance. The voluntary arm of Minnesota OSHA is the OSHA Workplace Safety Consultation Program. This program is the voluntary arm of OSHA. It provides a wide variety of free services, including on-site consultation, training, education, and outreach in the general industry and in construction settings. Services are provided by safety and health experts who are highly qualified. These services are free and completely separate from MnOSHA compliance. No citations or fines are issued, provided that the employer agrees to and correct all serious hazards identified by the workplace safety consultant. Additionally, the Workplace Safety Consultation Program administers the Safety Abatement Grant Program. This program assists employers in making their workplaces safer and healthier. It awards funds with a dollar for dollar match up to $10,000 for projects designed to reduce the risk of injury or illnesses to employees. This is a favored program within the Department of Labor and Industry. And although we only match up to $10,000, records show that employers often contribute significantly more. And this grant program is simply an incentive to engage employers and to help employers prioritize safety in the workplace. In addition to the investigations and outreach that I've spoken about earlier, Minnesota OSHA also participates in partnerships to further support Minnesota workplaces. We create partnerships and alliances throughout the program. The alliances promotes voluntary compliance, and Minnesota OSHA works with these allies to reach out to, educate, and lead Minnesota employers and their employees in improving and advancing workplace safety and health. We have two cooperative compliance programs. These programs are administered out of the OSHA compliance unit. These partnerships are with the Associated General Contractors of Minnesota and the Minnesota chapter of the Associated Builders and Contractors. These programs seek to build a safe and helpful work environment for all in the construction process. These programs promote best practices to build safe and helpful work environments based on mutual trust and respect of all parties involved. The last partnership programs include the Minnesota Safety and Health Achievement Recognition Program and the Minnesota STAR Program. Both these programs recognize companies whose managers and employees work together to develop safety and health programs that go above and beyond the basic compliance with OSHA standards. It results in immediate and long-term prevention of job-related injuries and illnesses. The next program within the Department of Labor and Industry is the Construction Code and Licensing Division. This division develops and enforces construction codes and laws to protect the safety of occupants in commercial and residential structures. We accomplish this work through education, inspection, plan reviews, licensing, and enforcement. Additionally, CCLD administers the Contractor Recovery Fund. This fund helps make homeowners whole when they use licensed contractors who do not perform the work as agreed to or leave the work incomplete. The Construction Code and Licensing Division also administer provisions that supports the Office of Combative Sports.
Commissioner?
Yes.
Excuse me. Representative Detmer has a question here. I hope that's all right if we break it in the middle of it. Representative Detmer.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for coming in. And we spoke a couple of weeks ago regarding your role as our commissioner. And I remember I brought up the building code, one bill that I'm carrying, I carried last year, I'll be carrying this year again, is regarding statutes 2020, section 326-106, subdivision 4, dealing with the new buildings with pitched roofs and the requiring dedicated anchors for window cleaning. And what my bill would do would be amend that so that if it's a, the current statute was written with the flat roof in mind, and a lot of new construction now has pitched roofs. And I've gotten, I've been contacted by a lot of different developers that are putting up apartments, built complexes with pitched roofs. And they see no reason to put the anchors in there because they can't be used because of the pitched roof. A flat roof is something that they can use the anchors for. So I would hope, you know, you and I had discussed that earlier when you called my office and we had a good discussion. I hope we can go forward with that legislation. I know Scott McKellen and also Kate Bruschek was at the meeting in my office when we developed the language. The language is just one sentence, that if it's a pitched roof, that would be, you wouldn't have to put those anchors in. So I know there's developers that are waiting to see if we can amend that statute. But thank you again for speaking with me a few weeks ago and then today. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, the department looks forward to continuing to engage you in dialogue to address this issue.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Commissioner, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next area that I will discuss is the labor standards area. The Labor Standards Unit administer and enforce workplace regulations to ensure workers are paid correctly and workplace rights and responsibilities are observed by all. The Department of Labor and Industry is currently reviewing its approach and developing strategies to move from a complaint-based model of enforcement to a strategic compliance model. These efforts are supported through making more strategic decisions, including our hiring processes, adding additional investigative personnel to address complaints and requests for assistance. We have reorganized the construction misclassification unit and included it in the labor standards unit. We're investing in comprehensive investigator training and occupational safety training to prepare labor and industry investigators to pivot to field investigative work. We're investing funding to develop a series of labor standards videos to inform employers and employees about their rights and responsibilities. We're leveraging technology, particularly during the COVID pandemic, to engage employers and workers. We're also investing in a project to develop resources for pregnant or nursing mothers about their employment rights related to pregnancy accommodation and nursing at work under the Women Economic Security Act. We're also investing in the development and launch of a new and more robust case management system for labor standards investigations. Finally, I'd like to talk about the Department Workforce Development Programs. At Labor and Industry, we have three programs that focuses on workforce development. The first program is the Youth Skill Training Program. This workforce development program supports partnerships between interested high schools, employers, and community-based organizations to provide a safe, helpful, and meaningful paid work experience to students 16 years and older. The second program is the Dual Training Pipeline Program. This program supports employers to develop internal training combined with related instruction with on-the-job training to produce the skill workforce that employers need in their workspace. The key strategies to support employers and industry leaders include industry forums convened 3 times a year to stay at the forefront of industry trends. We provide competency validation, bringing together experts for each occupation to ensure the dual training model is competency-based, and dual training consulting offers one-on-one feedback in small groups. We have several outreach strategies to support this program. The program has been deemed highly successful. Our speaker series are well attended, and we continue to provide continued outreach to participants and those that are interested in participating in the pipeline program. The third and final workforce development program at Labor and Industry is the apprenticeship program. Apprenticeship Minnesota is the premier workforce development program at Labor and Industry. It is the one program that consistently develops highly skilled workers capable of earning high wages that will allow those workers to train and prepare themselves to earn a livable wage. For me, apprenticeship is extremely important. It is the first program area that I worked in, coming to the Department of Labor and Industry at the very beginning of my career. I've watched the program grow. I have seen its impact. The program speaks to me personally. My now 26-year-old son went through a registered apprenticeship program. His interest in registered apprenticeship started very early because he was the only one of my children that was willing to ride along with me late evenings to apprenticeship graduations and other apprenticeship functions. When my son graduated from high school, he had some interest, a stated desire in higher education. However, I think he had enough hesitation, not really ready to continue on in a formal educational program. He got started in a couple of pre-apprenticeship programs and continued to work as a pre-apprentice until he was accepted into a formal program. As he started his program, I was just wrapping up my 30 years of work at the Department of Labor and Industry and was preparing for retirement. Certainly, like any young person, he was quite nervous at the thought of, oh my God, my mom is not going to be around. Fortunately, I have been able to provide my children a degree of stability with living in a single family home their entire lives. My son was nervous and very unsure of what his life would look like without me right there with him, supporting him every day. As he began his registered apprenticeship program, he quickly realized his earning capabilities. Because being financially responsible is a core principle for me, I had always expressed to my children the need to prepare for the future, prepare to be able to take care of themselves, and always prioritize saving. Save what you have today because you can't save when you don't have it. And further, I encourage them to develop their goals and use their resources to support big things. Don't squander your resources away on small things because you'll never have enough to do anything big. As I prepared for my retirement, I encouraged my son to consider purchasing a home because he had never lived in an apartment and I didn't think he would do very well in that setting. After just 2 short years of being a registered apprentice, my son was able to purchase his own home at the age of 21. He's now completed his registered apprenticeship program, is a full-fledged journey worker, is vested in his pension program, and is a fully independent adult capable of supporting himself and capable of supporting a family. The principles of registered apprenticeship have consistently produced workers capable of earning a high wage. We certainly recognize that not all individuals are prepared or desire to go on to a four-year college. In my household, I had a mix. My son graduated from his apprenticeship program on May 9th of 2019. 3 days later, on Mother's Day, my daughter graduated from college. That day was actually Mother's Day, and I could not have been more proud to have both of my children standing next to me at that time. The difference was my son was already engaged in his career. He walked away from completing his apprenticeship program with zero debt, already a homeowner, already vested in his pension plan, and already saving for his future, including retirement. My daughter, on the other hand, walked away from a four-year school with significant student loan debt and not really sure about what she was going to do with this very expensive degree that she had just received. So for me, registered apprenticeship is a program that is capable of lifting individuals out of poverty and allowing them to earn enough wages to support themselves and a family. I am extremely proud of my son, and I am extremely proud of the work that the Department of Labor and Industry do to promote registered apprenticeship.
Commissioner Robertson, am I unmuted? Yeah, I am. Commissioner Robertson, Representative McDonald has a question. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner Roberts, and appreciate the talk that you and I had a week or so ago regarding this very issue with our children. My son is an apprentice as well in the heating and air conditioning plumbing at 20 years old, and he had a year in college at South Dakota State. I was very proud that he went to school out there, but decided that he just didn't want to go back and go into debt. So now, as I shared with you, I'm sharing with the rest of the group, but we'll make this hopefully a something that's evident in a lot of our school kids around this state. And now at 20 years old, he bought his first house, 5-bedroom, 3-car garage, needs a lot of work. Of course, he's only 20, but with his salary as a apprentice for plumbing here in town, loves the work. Is the apprenticeship, so I have two questions, I'll make them quick. This one, just to probably yes or no, is the apprenticeship only for union members or not? Does Dolly help in the apprenticeship with non-union shops?
Mr. Chair, Representative, apprenticeship certainly. Union construction in particular is very active in registered apprenticeship. It is the preferred training model. However, there is nothing in the law that limits or prohibits any employer from utilizing the principles of registered apprenticeship. Labor and Industry stands ready to work with any employer who's interested in developing a standardized program for training of their employees. We have both union, non-union businesses engaged in registered apprenticeship.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. And I'm not saying it's good or bad. Matter of fact, we're just talking with my son regarding unions shops, and maybe it might be a good thing to go in the unions. Many good advantages to that. So he at his age has to decide that. But I'm certainly encouraging him to perhaps do that. So I know the good things that happen with that. So question regarding one of your sheets that you passed out that I was reading in reductions. So you had a one-liner. I just wrote it down. The reduction in system cost per 100 a payroll, which is good, savings monies, I would presume. But it said reduction in system cost per 100 of payroll from 2009 to 2019. I believe it was a 23% production reduction in business average per premium rate. So I'm just wondering if you could please better explain a reduced system costs in workers' compensation and how is it achieved and what is working on to further help the employers.
Commissioner.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative, I will be quite honest. I'm not sure what where you are referring to. Is it on our two-page handout?
Go back to my
Representative McDonald.
Yes?
Well, just we need to run through the chair, Representative. So just I'm just calling on you to.
Yep. Sorry, it's on. Sorry, Mr. Chair. This when you zoom with your phone and you try to read the emails, it's on top of paragraph 2 of the page. Yeah. It was a two pager, Commissioner, Mr. Chairman. And I'm usually always good at going through the chair, Mr. Chair, but have a little. Mercy on me for this time.
That's not a problem, Representative McDonald. I'm just trying to establish how we're going to do things in this brave new world. Commissioner, did you find where Representative McDonald was talking about?
Unfortunately, I haven't. My apologies to you.
Representative McDonald, could we, we have plenty of time if we can was it on one of the two-page handouts that Committee Administrator Reese sent out prior to this
yes.
meeting? Is that what you're talking about?
That is correct. One of the colorful diagrams. Mm-hmm. I could just read it. What it said. Would you like that, Mr. Chair?
That'll work, Representative McDonald.
Oh,
okay.
My apology, Mr. Chair. I do apologize. We said on the second page. I was looking on the second page. I have that as my first page, so I apologize for the confusion. Yes. Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, I'm not prepared to speak to that issue. I will get with my staff and give you a more thorough response to that. If I can get back with you, I'd appreciate it.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, yeah, that's fine, Commissioner. There's no rush, but as soon as you get that, you can email me. That's fine, too. Or another question the next committee. But that's fine. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I ask one more question? Do we have time?
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair. What do users think of the campus system? These are all things I'm learning as well, but just curious what they think of the campus system, and are there any user issues with the campus system?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, what do users think of the campus system? The campus system is a very dynamic system. It is transforming the way that labor and industry is administering workers' compensation benefits. The system launched on November 2nd after a two-year development period. During the development period, we established 7 work groups to provide input to the agency as the system was being developed. Like like many or the majority of large systems, we launched the system and had great expectations. Unfortunately, we have had some bumps in the road. The system has not worked as smoothly as intended. However, we remain in contact and we in contact with our supporters, and I believe we continue to enjoy the support of stakeholders. We have developed a number of strategies to address the outstanding concerns. During the initial development, we had 7 work groups representing the core stakeholders of the workers' compensation system, including employer group, including a lawyer group representing both the petitioners and plaintiffs bar. We had a work group representing vocational rehabilitation counselors. And certainly work groups representing the insurance industry. Since the launch of that program, we have maintained those relationships with each of those work groups. And in an attempt to understand what the challenges are that prohibits stakeholders from engaging with the system, we have developed numerous answer hours where interested individuals and stakeholders can call into the office, speak with the program manager, and we help to navigate those individuals addressing their concerns on the spot or adding those concerns to our issue list. Since November 2nd, we have developed a schedule to provide weekly releases so that as issues are addressed, we're creating a clear communication stream back to those users to identify what the issues are, how and when, how they have been or will be resolved, and attaching a time frame to it. We continue to be in close contact with all users of the system. We are developing on a weekly basis. We are providing a newsletter specific to each of the industries. So when we are providing them updates, they know that we are speaking directly to them. We consider where we're at today to be part of the stability period with the system. Prior to the system going live, we engaged other jurisdictions who had recently developed systems. I remember talking to the program administrator in the state of Kansas. They launched the system, I believe, at the end of 2018. I talked to them probably about mid-year 2019. And the administrator told me to expect that stability would take 6 to 9 months and that we would not see the full benefits of the system immediately. So far, that is certainly proven true. However, that said, one observation that I have had came from feedback from a stakeholder where the insurer operates in several states, not just Minnesota. And the feedback from that individual indicated Wow, congratulations, Minnesota. You've developed a good, robust system. It is user-friendly and intuitive. When I received that comment, it made me think that for stakeholders who are accustomed to operating in systems with an electronic data interchange, those individuals were better prepared and is more familiar with how the system can and should operate. And so our feedback from individuals who operate in those other states, they are far more comfortable and have experienced less challenges. For stakeholders who only operate here in the state of Minnesota, they have faced more challenges because this is their first soiree with electronic data interchange. That in no way devalues or does not give proper weight to the concerns or challenges that they are facing, but I am confident that with more experience, with continued open communication and dialogue, that we will get the Minnesota stakeholders to the place where there is full user acceptance, user understanding, and the system will operate in the manner in which it was intended. My commitment is to continue to work with our stakeholders to address the concerns that interfere with their places of business performing the necessary functions to process the workers' compensation claims. I am confident that with time, the system will stabilize and the system will perform in the way as intended.
Representative McDonald.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, thank you, Commissioner. In the interest of time, perhaps if you could, because this is a big issue, and especially now with employers having so much to deal with, keeping the doors open necessarily and all the other issues this past year, perhaps you could put it into a synopsis of some of the current problems and challenges and solutions that our Dolly plans to do. You need to do it, you know, Mr. Chairman, we could either have her email that to the committee or just me. I don't want to take up the committee's time, or if she has a simple answer for that now would be fine as well. But I think it's important and it's good to hear, Commissioner, that you the comments are that you're making improvements and the solutions are doable and helpful. So that is encouraging. But I think for some of us members, it might be good to get caught up on many of the problems that that have occurred and the solutions that you anticipate solving with these issues.
Representative McDonald, today was designed as just a general overview. We are planning a deeper dive into this subject later on in committee where Commissioner Robertson and or her deputy commissioners can come in and do a deeper dive for our questions then. But I appreciate the questions and comments, and I appreciate what Commissioner Robertson had to say as well on spur more on this question. So thank you, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner.
Commissioner, please proceed.
Thank you. Actually, Mr. Chair, that completed my prepared remarks. Not sure if your committee have an interest in the agency policy proposals, but if you are, I'd certainly be willing to share what labor and industry have in mind this legislative session.
Thank you, Commissioner. Ms. Peruchak had those jackets delivered to my office yesterday, and the committee administrator and I will be going over them, and then we'll have the agency do a deeper dive into what you have planned for that as well. But we'd like to digest them first, if that's okay with you. Representative Raleigh, you had your hand up.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I'd like to ask Commissioner Robertson a question.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Robertson, On the last slide, it showed that there was 11,168 active participants, 3,649 new, which is the 32% of the new towards the active. And then you had, and I don't have the slide in front of me, it's off the screen right now, but it looked like there were a little over 11,000 completions. Can you help me understand, are the 11,000 active total throughout the program or currently active? And are the 11,000 plus completions as of this fiscal year, which the other numbers were relating to fiscal 2020, or is it 11,000 plus completions total? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, if we can go back to that slide, I think it will be helpful. The 11,168 are active apprentices. These are current as of December 31st. In terms of the completion, that's 1,448 completions in fiscal year 2020. So that would be as of June 30th.
No, Representative Raleigh. Representative Raleigh.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Robertson, when we do the deeper dive, could we also please get the numbers on since inception to current fiscal year? Because that way we can compare and contrast the current active to the previous active, the current registrations to previous registrations, and then get a sense of the overall impact that this very important project, program has on the state of Minnesota. Thank you, Chair Eklund.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we will be happy to do that. Yes, I think the one thing that may appear a little bit confusing is because registered apprenticeship is, you can have individuals that are in their first year of training or their fourth year of training. All of those individuals would be considered active. As individuals graduate, additional folks are coming into the program. The 3,600 are new registrations for this current year. So those would be either first year apprentices or apprentices that are beginning their formal training. We'll be happy to do a deeper dive and provide you additional metrics that looks at the apprenticeship program.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I do have a question, Commissioner, and then other members, if you have questions, please use the raise hand function. So Commissioner, you brought up the STAR program earlier, and the industry that I retired from, the paper mill that I retired from was in the STAR program. I don't know if it still is. Can you give us an idea how well that program is working, and can individual companies come and go, or is there a long-term commitment when they enter this program?
Mr. Chair, the STAR program is indeed a favorite program. The STAR program in particular, because there is no size limitations, we find a number of large national organizations are very interested in those programs. When employers are evaluated to participate in the STAR program, the initial certification is for 3 years. Currently, the department have 35 sites that participate in these programs. After 3 years, the programs are reevaluated to determine their interest in continuing to participate in the program, as well as revisiting those core requirements that make them eligible. So we have some employers that have continued in the program through consecutive years. We have some employers that don't make it through the reevaluation period, or because of interest or available resources in their organization, they're not able to continue. Most importantly, we feel that merely participating in these programs have a beneficial effect on workplace safety and health. These programs rely on open communication and mutual trust between management and employees. All of these programs have very active and supportive safety committees, and so they are able to address many of the safety concerns through shared responsibility and, again, mutual respect. If the committee is interested, Mr. Chair, I will be happy to provide you with detailed metrics as to who the STAR employers are and their history of participation in the program.
Thank you, Commissioner. If you could share that with the committee and with the committee administrator, I would appreciate that. So, members, is there any other questions for Commissioner Robertson? Seeing none, Commissioner, thank you for you and your staff. I appreciate it. And Travis and I will get in touch with you as far as the subjects that we want to do a deeper dive in as the committee goes along. And it's a great interest. A lot of these are of great interest to a lot of us. So we'll be in touch, obviously. So thank you for your time. I appreciate you taking part in the committee hearing.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you very much for providing this opportunity to me. I look forward to continuing to work with you and provide the information that you've requested. Thank you very much for having me, and have a good rest of your day.
Thank you, Commissioner Robertson. Members and staff, our next meeting will be Tuesday, January 19th at 3 p.m. The plan is to get an overview from the Department of Veteran Affairs and the Department of Military Affairs. Are there any other questions for myself or committee staff at this time? Seeing no hands raised, we'll see you next Tuesday. This meeting is adjourned.